Chapter 3. The Enigma of Kirkwall. A Templar troop on the move seemed like one mighty creature. Their armor flashed, silver bright and splendid in the wintry sunlight, as they advanced along the Wycombe Road. The heavy tramp of their feet took the ground as they marched. Their banners snapped in the chill breeze, the sword and branch clear to see from half a mile off. Hawk grabbed Fenris's arm and nearly threw himself flat in the undergrowth behind the nearest rock, dragging Fenris down with him. "Don't move! Don't even breathe!" he hissed. He paused. "Well, breathe, but quietly." Fenris raised his eyebrows. Hawk was half under him. "Shut up," Hawk added, and then made a face and put a hand over his own mouth. Fenris took the hand and moved it away. Hawk smiled ruefully up at him. He was armored and not exactly comfortable to lie on, but Fenris did not try to move. The Templars might notice, he told himself. Their hands were still tangled. Hawk turned his head sideways and kissed Fenris's fingers. They could no longer see the troop, but they could hear the steady thump and jingle of 100 armored boots hitting the ground in unison. As it drew closer, a new sound rose with it. Out of 100 throats, a battle hymn of the chantry, rich with deep harmonies. Even here, lying under a bush behind a rock with an apostate beside him, beside and underneath him, it called out to something in Fenris. He heard again the women's voices rising through the hollow heights of Kirkwall's lost chantry, singing light into the world. Hawk's fingers tightened around his. Fenris looked back at him, only realizing then that he had looked away. Hawk's mouth was a tight line. His cheeks were pale under the dark beard and the pattern of light and shadow filtering through the leaves.
"Are you well?" Fenris whispered.
"Who, me? Fine. There's only 100 of them, and I'm only the most recognizable apostate in the free marches," Hawk whispered back.
"Nothing to worry about." "They will not hurt you," Fenris murmured.
"Oh, sure. Some Templars are nice Templars. Forgive me if I don't want to risk it. Remember Meredith? Scary lady, lyrium sword, tried to kill me and turned into a horrible statue. A week is a long time, I know, but I thought it was pretty memorable."
Hawk's whisper had become an audible hiss by the end. Fenris put his hand over his mouth.
"Shh,"
he reminded him.
Hawk rolled his eyes, but silently. "They will not hurt you," Fenris whispered again, and this time he clarified. "I will not let them."
Hawk looked up at him, and kept looking, and this time Fenris could not look away from him. Though the Templars marched and sang somewhere he was vaguely aware of, not very far off. He lifted his hand away, and Hawk caught his wrist, his hand resting over the strip of red cloth.
"Fenris," he said.
His eyes were heavy-lidded. His lashes, Fenris found himself thinking, were quite ridiculously long. He leaned in as if drawn down by a spell. Hawk burst out laughing right before their lips touched. Fenris jerked back, startled.
"Faker," Hawk said, grinning at him. "Think how awkward it would have been if the Templars caught me because I couldn't keep my hands off you, even if my life literally depended on it."
"You," said Fenris, and then several things caught his attention at once. The sound of tramping feet was gone, though the singing still remained. It had a hollow, echoing sound, as if they were indoors. When he looked up, somewhere high above the leaves, which covered them, there was the suggestion of an arched ceiling. It was too high. No chantry reached to the sky. He looked back at Hawk, who had not moved.
"This never happened," he said.
The Templars had marched past, and he and Hawk had lain there barely breathing. He had told Hawk he would protect him, but Hawk had not looked at him that way, had not started laughing, had certainly not cracked a joke. His jokes had become rare and strained since the gallows. The body under him was twisting into a sick, misshapen form, black lines running under the skin in the pattern of veins, black corruption spreading beneath the skin of what was still recognizably Hawk's face.
And then the face split open along the lines, and blood and putrid flesh boiled out of the gashes, twisting the features beyond recognition. The creature opened its mouth and screeched in something that was no longer Hawk's voice. Fenris's own cry of horror woke him. He sat up, and then slung his legs over the edge of the bed. There was some weak comfort in having the solidarity of the floor under his feet. He could hear the usual bustle of the hanged man floating up from the taproom. It did not matter how late it got. This place never truly slept. He touched his naked right wrist with the fingers of his left hand. He had almost convinced himself that he did not miss wearing Hawk's colors. Hawk had laid the whole thing out very plainly when they parted. He had made himself clear. Fenris did not even have the red cloth anymore. It was not the first time he had woken from such a dream. It was not the first time he had sat in the cold and dark of night and asked himself if it was real. Could that have been Hawk? The true Hawk? Had Fenris just witnessed his destruction? No. He said out loud into the shadows of the empty room. No. A clear, crisp morning dawned eventually. Fenris was grateful for the day, for the chance to finally act. In the uppermost alleyways of Darktown, they passed the homes of the desperate and hopeful, struggling up through the mire towards the dubious light of low-town respectability. Varric stopped to chat with an apothecary whose profitable sideline in poisons had pulled him up to these almost heights. An older woman approached Merrill and began to harangue her unintelligibly. Fenris drew his sword in case she was the first stage of an ambush. He had known Darktown gangs to be clever. Merrill listened politely and then said, "Oh no, Sarah, I didn't know. I'll be sure to tell Aveline. She'll know what to do." The woman ambled off, apparently satisfied. Fenris did not put his blade away. He met the eyes of a heavy-set human who was standing too casually in the shadow under an overhanging walkway. The man looked at him, looked at Merrill in her old clothes with her mage's staff, glanced at Varric, whose well-made coat looked positively gaudy in this muck, and seemed to decide it was not worth it. When he shook his head and melted away, a dozen more men followed him. "You were nearly murdered for your boots just now," Fenris said when Varric was done with the poisoner.
"In Darktown? No kidding," said Varric. "There's good eating on a boot, and these are real leather."
He stamped his feet a couple of times.
"Ordinary prowlers or Carta? Shouldn't be Carta. I'm paid up."
"Prowlers," said Fenris. "I did not recognize their leader."
"It's been a year. Could have been a dozen new gangs in that time, but we'd better not hang around in their territory. Did you say down, Daisy?"
Down they went, along sloping alleyways where daylight barely penetrated, and then along tunnels where daylight did not come at all. They passed through the territories of half a dozen different gangs, only one of which was foolish enough to try to extract a toll. Down, always down, into Darktown's true depths, where people had hung rickety doors on hollows in the tunnel walls for homes, and ancient props were all that kept the low ceiling from collapsing. And here and there, piles of rubble marked roots that had caved in and were now sealed forever.
"Makes you wonder if there was anyone on the other side," Varric muttered as they passed one. "And if they had another way out."
They saw few people in the tunnels. Those who lived this far down existed in perpetual wariness, and feared strangers even more than they feared each other. The foul stench of rot and sewage permeated the warrens. After a while, Fenris almost stopped noticing the fetid taste at the back of his throat each time he breathed in. The ground underfoot sloped ever downwards. The intermittent light wells became rarer and rarer, and then there were no more at all. They met their first demon about an hour after the last time they saw daylight. Fenris was almost expecting it by then. It was a shambling corpse, still dressed in its ancient rags, and it stumbled out of the shadows of a side tunnel, moaning quietly. Decaying chunks of flesh hung from its bony frame. Merrill yelped. Varric put two crossbow bolts into its skull before Fenris even had his sword in his hand.
All right there, Daisy?
Yes, sorry, it just startled me.
Undead, said Fenris. He had his sword now, and he did not put it away. We should expect more to come.
How many walking corpses do you think are stumbling around in the dark under Kirkwall? Varric asked. Wait, never mind. I don't want to know. I like being able to sleep.
Merrill came over to inspect the corpse.
Look, he's a miner. He still has his pickaxe.
It was a rusted skeleton of a tool, slung from the corpse's fraying rope belt.
Damn, said Varric. Do you have any idea how long it's been since anyone mined anything under Kirkwall?
It's a good sign. It means we're probably going the right way.
Probably doesn't sound good, said Varric.
Do you actually know where you're going? Fenris demanded.
Well, said Merrill, sort of. There isn't really a map.
I hope you have a plan for getting us out again, then, said Varric.
Because if I was meant to die wandering in monster-infested tunnels, my family would never have left Orzammar.
Oh no, it's easy, Merrill said. I'm looking for the thin place in the Vale, you see, and I just have to feel my way along the slope of it. It's like going down a mountain. It's very easy to tell which way is the steepest. And when we want to get out, we just go back up.
And how are we supposed to tell, Daisy? What if you get knocked out? You're the only mage.
Oh, said Merrill. I didn't think of that. She cocked her head.
No, it's all right. The closer we are to the weak spot, the more demons and spirits there are. If you want to get out, just go away from them.
In other words, Fenris said, we are, at this moment, going towards them.
Well, yes, Merrill said. Oh, and I forgot to say, be careful. If the notes are right, then spirits can talk to even non-mages down here. If you hear any voices, don't listen. They probably aren't very safe.
Oh, said Merrill, an hour and more than 24 corpses later. What?
A door, she pointed. A proper door.
It was an incongruous sight in these winding tunnels. The pointed double arch was supported by carved pillars with the forms of snarling dragons. Merrill lit the Veilfire braziers that hung from the brackets in the wall on either side, and in the flickering blue-green light, the eyes of the sculpted monsters gleamed green.
Are those emeralds? Said Varric.
I've seen this style before, Fenris said. The architecture of ancient Tevinter was a rare sight in Minrathus. Too many centuries and too many powerful magisters had left their determined mark, and few of the city's great buildings had not been demolished to their foundations and replaced with ever-increasing grandeur. But there were parts of the magisterium that had been preserved, and though the great old triumphal arches had been mostly stripped of their dragon carvings, one or two could still be seen. None retained their gemstone eyes. This is the work of the old Tevinter Imperium, he said.
Wonderful. Do we go through or do we keep heading down? Said Varric.
Through, said Merrill.
But carefully. She paused. I think we should all try to be very calm. Calm and cheerful. Think about nice things.
Here?
Well, try not to think about sad things, said Merrill. Or angry things.
She glanced at Fenris. I am not angry, said Fenris flatly.
Oh, good, said Merrill. Just keep being not angry, as hard as you can.
Are you expecting rage demons, Daisy? Varric said.
Well, I don't know, said Merrill. But I think if I was a spirit here, I would be quite angry.
Beyond the doorway lay what seemed almost another world. Veilfire arced from brazier to brazier after Merrill lit the first one. The paving stones beneath their feet shone in the green light. Arched stonework supported the high ceiling. Carved stone dragons coiled beneath the flying buttresses.
This place is just screaming Lost Temple to me, Varric said. Have I mentioned I hate lost temples?
You do? Said Merrill. Lost temples, lost tigs, lost tombs, lost civilizations of all kinds, Daisy. I've learned my lesson. There's usually a reason these places get lost.
He glanced upwards and shivered as the jeweled eyes of the dragon carving directly above them caught the light.
I bet people worked hard to misplace this one.
But...
Did you hear that?
Said Fenris sharply. They all paused. A deep silence fell. Fenris looked up. The eyes of the carved dragons glittered. There was no sound.
I don't hear anything, said Merrill.
Fenris shook his head.
I'm sorry, it was...
They promised, they said if we did as we were told.
Nothing, he finished,
and shook his head again. His ears were ringing as if he had just surfaced from deep underwater. Varric and Merrill were both watching him, Varric dubiously and Merrill with concern.
Calm and cheerful, remember? She said.
How can I be cheerful when Hawk is imprisoned in nightmares? Fenris demanded.
Merrill looked tremulous, and then determined, and then she said, Try! There were no more wandering corpses, and no demons, but there were many whispers. Fenris stopped tensing up when he heard them after the first few times. It served no purpose. The whispering voices were not trying to tempt him. There were no offers, no promises, no suggestions. Just endlessly,
they promised us.
What did they promise you?
Merrill asked at one point.
Who did?
Fenris had not heard the whisper that prompted her. The voices seemed to speak to only one of them at a time. He listened closely for other sounds. The telltale stumbling gait of a corpse or the slither of a shade. But there was nothing. Only their footsteps disturbed the ancient silence. The lyrium in his markings shivered every time a new Veilfire brazier flickered into life, and the priceless eyes of the dragon carvings glittered, and sad, soft voices whispered around them.
We were promised. They swore it. We believed them.
Do you know who's talking, Daisy?
Said Varric after a while.
Oh, nobody, I think, said Merrill. Well, spirits, but very weak ones.
Why are they talking about promises?
It's this place's memories, she said. All the thoughts and feelings of the people who were here. It's supposed to be like this everywhere in the Fade where terrible things have happened. Here the veil is thin so we can actually hear it.
Whatever they were promised, Varric said, I don't think they got it. I wonder who they were.
Slaves,
Fenris said.
You think so?
Varric said.
I know, said Fenris.
He did not know how he knew. The certainty was inside him all the same.
These are the voices of slaves.
As if to answer them, the whispers suddenly grew louder.
They promised us everything, and they took everything. They promised us a future, and they lied. They lied! We, the chosen, we, the special, we came willingly in exchange for what was offered.
He flinched before it, distantly aware of a sudden chill and a rattle of dust blowing past his feet. One voice, fiercer than the rest, spoke not in a whisper, but in a low roar like a distant rumble of thunder.
You know us. Mages betrayed you into nothingness just as they betrayed us. You are like us, like me.
Yes, Fenris murmured.
He did know them, he thought distantly, and they knew him. They knew his old hatred, the sickness that did not die. He felt them recognize it and comprehend it perfectly. They saw in his mind the high towers of the Magisterium, familiar even stripped of the dragon carvings they knew. And they hissed their ancient anger. Those walls should be torn down, and everything inside them destroyed. Everything the Lords of Tevinter had ever touched should be co-signed to oblivion. They needed only an instrument for their vengeance.
Oh, shit, he heard someone say,
somewhere that seemed far away and not very real. His attention was all for the whispering slaves. He felt their bitterness, their despair, their long isolation. No one had ever understood him like this. Riss! Fenris! A sharp crack of too loud sound, real sound, accompanied by a sudden burst of pain in the side of his face. Fenris opened his eyes. Sorry, I'm sorry, said Meryl. She shook out her hand as she backed away. How do you feel?
You just slapped me, Fenris said. He worked his jaw a couple of times. It hurt. How do you think I feel?
What she's asking is, do you feel possessed at all? Said Varric.
Bianca was in his hands. The bolt was aimed at Fenris's head. Fenris stared at it. He thought back over the last few moments. He could still hear the whispering, like the surging of the sea.
Tear down the walls, destroy their cities, kill them in their hundreds, in their thousands, innocent and guilty, as they did to us. Let them know what they did to us. Let them feel it. Punish them.
He shuddered.
Varric looked at his face and then slowly lowered his crossbow.
All better? Said Meryl.
Oh, yes, Fenris said bitterly.
The voices of the dead slaves were soft and indistinct again.
I could not be more calm and cheerful if I tried.
The sad thing is, that's probably true, said Varric.
Fenris looked away. He shrugged his shoulders hard and shook his head. So, that was possession, or nearly. It had not felt like something being taken from him. It had felt like something being given.
It can't be very much further, Meryl said. Let's be quick.
She was correct. Through the next door, the winding corridor opened out into a great hall. A great carved dragon's head dominated the far end of the room, and the only way forward was a dark archway between its snarling jaws.
One-track mind, those Tevinters, Varric said. Dragons this, and dragons that, and dragons all the way down. What's wrong with statues of Nugs or something?
It would be a welcome change, at least, Fenris said.
I take it we go down the gullet, Daisy?
Yes, said Meryl. Her eyes were fixed on the dark archway. There was a slight wrinkle between her eyebrows.
There's something I can almost...
She advanced a step or two. Fenris remembered what had nearly happened to him and readied himself, watching her narrowly as he adjusted his grip on his sword. But no demonic corruption erupted through her flesh. She simply stood and stared. After a moment, she turned around, eyes very wide, and said,
"Don't move!"
In the shadows of the archway, something was happening. White threads of mist wove themselves into translucent figures with indistinct faces. The constant murmur of the slaves' voices fell abruptly silent. Only then did Fenris realize how accustomed to that sound he had become.
"But Lord Amladaris," said one of the indistinct figures standing in the shadows, "what if it's not there?"
"It will be," hissed a deep voice that echoed strangely across the high hall. "It will be ours." Varric winced.
"Now there's a voice I never wanted to hear again," he said. "We killed the bastard. I know we killed him. Twice."
"Corypheus," Fenris said softly.
"It's just a memory," said Meryl. "But a strong one."
"We are so close now. Do not despair. The gods are with us."
The memory, or spirit, or ghost, told its companions.
"The next series of sacrifices should be enough to finish the great work we have begun. We will have all the power we need at last."
"What about the thing?"
The shadow of Corypheus rounded on the figure who had spoken. "I told you to kill it!"
"We're trying," moaned the servant. "Lesser Magister? It keeps coming back."
Corypheus growled his displeasure, and then seemed to calm himself all at once. "It will not matter," he said. "When our work is done, we can deal with it at our leisure. Bind it and leave it. Come, it is nearly time." There was a swirl in the white mists as the figure turned and stalked away between the dragon's jaws. The other translucent beings lingered for a moment before they followed, beginning to dissipate even as they moved.
Fenris stared at the place where they had been. Nothing else moved. At last, Varric breathed out harshly.
"I really hate this place," he said. "You realize what this means, don't you? If that was really Corypheus and his friends, then there's only one thing they could have been talking about. This is the place. Kirkwall is the place where the Magisters raided the Golden City."
"I thought it must be," said Merrill.
"You knew?"
"Oh, well, yes," Merrill said. "Hawk found all these old notes, all about some secret magical research. And he brought them to me because, well, I quite like secret magical research. It took me ages to put it all together, but it's the only thing that makes sense. Kirkwall's very strange, you know. It's odd for humans to settle right next to a place like Sundermount. And the streets are laid out like the patterns of a rune. And there's so much magic." She paused. "I mean, I wasn't sure. Not all the way sure."
"Then Hawk knew about this place too," said Fenris.
Merrill nodded. "We were going to investigate it properly," she said. "Right before Anders... well, before everything got messy. Hawk thought... it must be the reason why everything in Kirkwall goes so wrong. There was horrible magic done here. Awful magic. And the echoes are in the veil, poisoning everything. But if we found it and fixed it..." It was exactly the sort of thing Hawk would get himself involved in. Fenris could picture him in these ancient, silent hallways, laughing at the dragon carvings, shaking off the whispers of the dead, fight through the demons and ghosts and whatever else lurked in the dark, down towards an ancient unspeakable horror, in order to simply fix whatever the Magisters had done here. The sheer good-natured arrogance of it, that was purest Hawk. A 1,000-year-old evil. Of course he was the one who ought to do something about it. Kirkwall, he would have said, was his city now. He would have come to Fenris in the abandoned Hightown mansion and invited him to join him. He would have smiled as he held out his hand. In fact, he probably would have brought all of them for a quest like this. His whole ragtag collection of ill-assorted friends. Isabella would have plucked out the dragon's gemstone eyes as they went. Aveline would have advanced on the ancient darkness with sword and shield and grim determination. Kirkwall was her city, too. Sebastian would have called it the Maker's Work. And the Abomination? Yes, even Anders. Fenris could see him here, too. Perhaps the Whispers would have seized him just as they had nearly seized on Fenris. The slaughtered slaves murmuring their ancient longing for justice. Justice. Vengeance. The voices nearly rose around him again as he had the thought. Fenris felt their attention fall on him and stiffened, denying them. He could not be their instrument. He would not be their vengeance. Yet he knew that if he had not had his quest, if he had not had Hawk to cling to like a talisman, he would have found it hard to refuse. They made too much sense to him. They understood him too well. It was terrifying. He forced himself back to the here and now, where Isabella was long gone and Aveline's life was given over to defending her city against Sebastian's invasion, where Anders was dead and Hawk was worse than dead. "Did you hear, though? They were looking for something," said Merrill.
"The Golden City, Daisy," Varric said. "Even you must be aware of the story," said Fenris.
"No, but... a story is only a way of explaining things that are difficult," Merrill said. "I think they meant to take something. You couldn't take the entire Golden City, could you? It's a city, not a thing. Well, it is a thing, but not a thing-thing."
"You've lost me," Varric said.
"They weren't sure if it was there," Merrill said. "I wonder if they found it."
"I'm more interested in what we're looking for," Varric said. "A weak place in the Vale, my eye. What exactly are we doing down here?"
"Well, we are looking for the weakest place. It ought to be there, you see," Merrill said. "I think it must be something elfin. Maybe something they took from the Sundermount? From the ruins of Arlathan."
"What is?" Fenris demanded.
"I don't know exactly," said Merrill. "But the Magisters succeeded, didn't they? They found a way into the Fade. And if we're going to get Hawk back, that's what we need to do, too."
There was a pause. Meryl looked from Varric's face to Fenris's. What? What is it?
No, you're right, said Varric faintly at last. If hopping through the Magister's gate to the Fade is what it takes to get Hawk back, that's what we've got to do.
He shook his head.
Let's just hope that whoever's in charge of these things can tell the difference between an invasion and a rescue mission. I don't want to go down in history as the cause of something worse than the Blight.
Fenris nodded once. Let us not waste time, he said. There was no ghostly mist left now between the dragon's jaws. The stairway beyond the arch was covered in slick black obsidian and led down. He did not even look around to see if the others were following. The whispering voices of the slaves had started up again. He ignored them. He was trying not to think too hard about what exactly it was that Meryl proposed they do. She had only said outright what Llewellyn had already hinted. To follow in the footsteps of those ancient magisters who in their hubris had brought the Blight to the world. What other way was there?
You could leave Hawk there, said something in the back of his mind.
He almost laughed. He could no more than do that than he could fly. He remembered, again, Hawk looking up at him as they hid from the Templars on the road to Wycombe, and the pattern of light and shadows filtering through the leaves onto his skin. Only one man, only one mage, no less. One mocking, flirtatious, unbelievably arrogant mage, whom Fenris had hardly ever found himself in agreement with. Who indeed seemed to take joy in disagreeing with him, winding him up, needling him, turning the whole world upside down and making Fenris see it another way. Just one man. He had shaken Fenris's hand in a friendly way at the crossroads outside of Wycombe and smiled when he told him goodbye. Fenris was a fool. He stopped short at the bottom of the stairs. All doubts and memories fled momentarily from his mind. The markings on his skin burned bright in sympathetic response to the great rush of magic. He felt rather than saw Meryl and Varric pause behind him. Before them stretched a great black cavern of a room. Wide, shallow trenches had been cut into the floor in intricate patterns that seemed to cross over one another in impossible, eye-wrenching ways. They shimmered with a dull red light. It was the same light that had shone in Meredith's eyes as the lyrium madness consumed her. At the heart of the pattern of the trenches lay a black altar. Over the altar, suspended in reddish light, hung a gently spinning orb. And at the far end of the room stood a black archway. The same dull, bloody light gleamed underneath it, a flat shine like a reflection in a mirror. All around the edges of the pattern lay bodies. They were piled in heaps. They had not rotted. The centuries had barely touched them. They still wore their ragged, blood-stained slaves' tunics. Their desiccated skin was stretched thinly across their faces, showing the shape of bone underneath features that nonetheless retained a terrible semblance of life. The whispering voices rose softly again.
"We were promised. We were betrayed."
"Well," said Varric, looking up at the black altar, "the good news is, there's our elven artifact."
"It's a focus," Meryl breathed. "They were all lost, long before the Dales were founded. They were lost. I never thought I'd see one."
"Really? Because Corypheus used an orb a lot like that one to open the breach at the Conclave," Varric said. Fenris was only barely aware of Meryl exclaiming, asking excited questions. He could not draw his gaze away from the heaped bodies. He found himself looking at one ancient face. It belonged to a young elven man, with sharp cheekbones and a hooked nose. It was still impossible to tell. He had once possessed, like Fenris himself, the dark complexion of the elves of the north. Fenris looked and looked, and he heard the fierce voice whisper,
You understand, you know."
He shouted a warning just as the dead man's eyes opened. Blue fire blazed in the empty sockets. The corpse climbed to its feet, a snarl distorting its long dead features. When it was standing, it swayed a little.
Varric got off a crossbow bolt that disintegrated as it came within a foot of the demon. It looked at them and spoke. Fenris saw its mouth moving, but he heard the words inside his head.
I will not be denied.
Blue light flickered in the corners of the dark room. When Fenris turned his head, he saw out of the corner of his eye a towering figure of light crouched over the body it was possessing. The spirit was gigantic.
The blood of the innocent called out to me, and I answered.
No other corpses woke. There was only one demon here, and it was very old and very, very strong.
I will spare no one,
it whispered.
I am the scourge. I am the punishment. Let the wheel turn. I will always come for the guilty. Release me. I will cleanse the world in slaughter.
You were right, Daisy, Varric said. He was almost shouting to make himself heard over the whispering that filled the air. I think this one's angry. He need not have said it. Fenris could feel it. It was rage, and worse than rage. It was despair, and worse than despair. Violence was all it had left.
Justice,
whispered the memories that rippled through the veil here.
We were slaughtered for their pride. We demand justice.
And softer still.
No justice could ever be enough.
Perhaps Anders had seen something like this, back when that was still truly his name. Perhaps this was what he had felt when he had offered himself up willingly to such a spirit. Fenris took a deep and shuddering breath. He looked past the thing to the black altar. We need that orb to get to Hawk, he said. The demon screeched with rage.
No, you will not have it. No, no more. No.
Its corpse body lurched towards them. Fenris had to unfocus his eyes to see the thing that was puppeting it. It came right up to the edge of the pattern of carved trenches that marked this stony floor and stopped. It's bound, Merrill said. It can't come any closer. If we don't go into the pattern, we're safe. We have to go in, said Fenris. He stared up at the black altar. It was so close. Okay, fine, Varric said. You think of a way to get past it then. Merrill aimed a firebolt at the thing. Just like Varric's crossbow bolt, it fell to nothingness, about a foot from the corpse.
It's very strong, she said doubtfully. Perhaps if we... Fenris!
A blaze of agony washed through Fenris's whole body as he crossed the first trench, and the lyrium in his markings flared to life. The demon turned eagerly towards him.
You?
Fenris swung his sword off his back, felt the familiar weight in his hands.
No,
he said. The face of the corpse the demon wore twisted. It hissed at him.
Traitor!
Then it attacked.